ball bearings. Both houses pushed the $10 billion defense appropriation bill toward final enactment. The House quickly adopted a joint conference report on the supply bill, which would provide the money for more tanks, guns, planes, and ammunition. Military committees on both sides of the Capitol worked long hours on draft legislation, and the House arranged to clear the decks for that bill as soon as the Senate committee approves it. The House committee has also already given its okay. At the same time, the Rules Committee opened the way for debate tomorrow on an omnibus bill that will reenact the World War Trading with the Enemy Act.
Los Angeles traffic officers today were ordered to stop all cars with headlights dimmed with colored paint and cellophane. In issuing the order banning the colored lights, Deputy Chief B.R. Caldwell declared that in the event of a blackout warning, motorists must pull off the highway and switch off the lights. Thousands of motorists either painted their headlights or colored them with cellophane after Los Angeles' first blackout.
Out in Chicago, a young man appeared in court today, complete with black eye, tattered clothes, wounded conscience. On top of all that, if that weren't enough, he was fined $200. The charge, disorderly conduct. But what really happened was that Edward A. Loss Jr. booed a sound movie of President Roosevelt in a newsreel theater out in Chicago. Well, after the crowd got through with him, the court began. Mr. Loss told the judge, "I didn't know what I was doing." He said he'd been turned down by both the Navy and the Marine Corps because of his eyes, but he will go into the service gladly if he's drafted.
They started something, but we're gonna end it right in their own backyard. We're proud of our country and proud to defend it, so Yankee Doodle hit 'em hard. Pull our shoulders to the wheel. The whole darn world will get a brand new deal. Oh, they started something, but we're gonna end it right in their own backyard.
And Said, written by Paul Reimer, is brought to you each weekday by Procter & Gamble, the makers of the new Sure Mix Crisco.
Hey, Lou, one of the neighbors donate this cherry pie?
Why?
Juicy cherries. And this flaky brown crust. Sure take my hat off to whoever made this.
But, honey, I did.
You did?
Yes.
But how come? First you swear off pie making because your crusts are tough. Then you produce a masterpiece like this.
Well, I found out something wonderful, Ed. It's a new pastry method developed by the makers of Crisco.
Crisco?
Yes. Crisco's a pure all-vegetable shortening that's wonderful for pies. And this new pastry method, why, it's a marvel. Even I can be sure of lovely, flaky pie crust.
Yes, every woman who's had trouble with tough pie crust can be sure of tender, flaky pastry now. And why? Because Crisco's surefire new pastry method does away with the two big causes of tough pie crust. Too much water in your dough and too much handling. You see, other recipes don't tell you the exact amount of water to use. You add a little water and a little more to your dough till you think it's about right. And too often you use too much water. So you get a sticky dough, a tough crust. But Crisco's easy new method does away with that guesswork. It tells you just how much water to use, so you get a dough that doesn't crumble or split, that's much easier to roll out. And boy, what wonderful pie crust. A delicate golden brown pie crust that's tender and flaky, yet doesn't crumble. So try this easy new Crisco method. You'll find the step-by-step directions right at your store, printed on the contest blanks for Crisco's Double Cash Contest. If by any chance your dealer doesn't have his supply yet, he will very soon. So just ask him to put aside one of the contest blanks with Crisco's pastry method on it. From now on, be sure of tender, flaky pies. Use pure, all-vegetable Crisco with Crisco's sensational new pastry method.
Japan made the attack on the Hawaiian Islands on Sunday, December 7th, with submarines as well as airplanes. That was Sunday, December 7th. Japanese envoys were still making peace overtures in Washington 3 hours and 40 minutes after that attack began. And the United States Navy communique number 10 is just in. Enemy operations over the island of Luzon in the Philippines continue. Operations on the ground are continuing in Manila and northwest sections of Luzon
and in the vicinity of Legazpi in southeastern Luzon. A special message to the Congress, in which the President placed on the records the events leading up to our war in the Pacific. For all history to read in amazement, in sorrow, in disgust. Those are the President's words. The history highlights the deterioration of peace in the Pacific through the visit of Special Envoy Kuru Su. On Sunday, December the 7th, an hour after the Japs had struck at our base in Hawaii, Kuru Su and Ambassador Nomura were in the State Department delivering a message to Secretary Hull, a message that was full of expressions of peaceful ties. The message from the Japanese government said that the Japanese emperor himself had long cherished the desire for the establishment of peace in the Pacific. An hour before, Japanese planes and undersea craft had struck, and at least 1,500 Americans were dead, and as many more were injured there in Hawaii. The attack began at 1:20 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Sunday. The two Japanese envoys were at the State Department with their message. And then 3 hours later, and this is a new disclosure too, 3 hours later, the Japanese premier himself telephoned Ambassador Gru, our man in Tokyo, that he wished to express for the Emperor of Japan his gratefulness for the cordial message from the President of the United States. And by that time, Hawaii was counting her dead and wounded. The President also sent to Congress his message on Lend-Lease aid, reporting that such aid to the 33 countries who are America's allies totaled nearly $1.3 billion through November 30th. A little less than half of that amount represents actual exports. The total amount voted is $13 billion, approved by Congress to date. Secretary of State Hull has refused to make any comment on declarations of war against the United States, which have been made by Romania, Hungary, and Bulgaria. Hull says they're too contemptible to warrant serious comment.
The Navy announces that Wake Island is probably captured by the enemy. And now it is disclosed that fewer than 400 Marines held Wake Island for at least 14 days against heavy Japanese attack. The Marines had 12 fighter planes and a small quantity of weapons. They were commanded by a 38-year-old Marine Major, James P.S. Devereux. They sank one Japanese light cruiser and three destroyers.
Now to get off of the war for just a moment, football officials on the West Coast are trying to figure out today what to do about the Rose Bowl game between Duke and Oregon State and the East-West game, both canceled for this region on New Year's Day. Definite suggestions have been made for the playing of the contests in other cities, but so far, no arrangements have been made.
You know, if you were to follow a busy doctor as he makes his daily round of calls, you'd find yourself having a mighty busy time keeping up with him. Time out for many men of medicine usually means just long enough to enjoy a cigarette. And because they know what a pleasure it is to smoke a mild, good-tasting cigarette, they're particular about the brand they choose. In a repeated national survey, doctors in all branches of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" Once again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Why not change to Camels for the next 30 days and see what a difference it makes in your smoking enjoyment? See how Camels agree with your throat. See how mild and good-tasting a cigarette can be.
In the Mediterranean Sea, two large Axis supply ships have been sunk. Half a dozen smaller Axis vessels have been damaged. That's the official word from the British Admiralty, and with it goes the explanation that the Germans and Italians are trying desperately to reinforce their North African front, shipping men and supplies into North Africa as fast as they can in order to bolster their sagging front in Libya. The British seem to think that they're sinking these men and supplies just about as fast as the Axis can dispatch them from Italy and Greece. And there are plenty of indications that these reinforcements are desperately needed by the Germans and the Italians on the Libyan desert. The British report from Cairo that the Imperial armies are slowly closing in on the retreating Nazis in a pincer movement, that the gap is so narrow tonight that the Germans have been forced to throw everything they've got into a delaying action. The Imperial Eighth Army is said to have engaged the Axis rear guard in battle 48 hours ago. Preliminary reports say that this battle is being fought in a heavy rain on a front extending from Gazala on the coast to a point as far south as Trigel Abd in the heart of the Libyan desert. Informed quarters in London say that the Axis is now trying to hold a front in Libya while reinforcements can be rushed up to keep the British out of Tripoli, thus to prevent the Imperial armies from taking up positions along the Tunisian frontier of French North Africa. That speculation ties in solidly with the belief current in Washington that Adolf Hitler is going to attempt to push down the west coast of Africa this winter, a push to new positions menacing the Western Hemisphere. This drive across the Mediterranean through Morocco to Dakar on the African west coast would definitely be menaced if the British were allowed to continue their drive across Libya. The Imperial armies would act as a knife being driven into the lifeline of Axis supply, the very lifeline of this new West African expedition, which many believe the Axis is now considering. Two things happened today which support the belief that Adolf Hitler is looking for a diversion from his Russian war. In Berlin, representatives of Germany, Italy, and Japan met in special session. The tripartite powers are going to decide on common measures to be taken in the war against Britain and the United States. Now, one of those common measures might be this West African drive of which we just spoke, a drive through Spain and Portugal over the Straits of Gibraltar to Dakar. At any rate, there is news from Spain today that might support this view, the belief that Spain will be used as the new Axis pathway to Africa. The Spanish Transatlantic Company says that all sailings of Spanish merchant ships for North and South America are postponed by government order. The dispatch from Spain does not explain the significance of this move, but the Associated Press points out that the cancellation of ship sailings is a signal of a change in a country's status with regard to the war. Right here in New York, there was immediate reaction to Spain's move with regard to shipping. The Spanish steamship De Tenerife was detained today by the combined action of the Coast Guard, Naval Intelligence, and Customs agents. Officials say that the Spanish vessel attempted to carry many parts of radio transmission and receiving sets, also a large quantity of lubricating oil, as well as $36,000 worth of silk. Now, all of these items were listed as ship stores on the manifest of the Spanish vessel instead of being declared as they should have been. While the world waits for Hitler's new feint in Europe, some new diversion, it's increasingly evident that the Nazis are in a tough spot in Russia. Moscow reports this evening that the Great Red Offensive is rolling on toward the north, that the Russians are battling to reopen connections between Moscow and Leningrad and to join the central and northern armies which were split by the Germans. The Soviets say that 42 new settlements in the northern sector have been overrun and retaken by the advancing Reds. Down on that southern wing of the Moscow offensive, Russian forces captured 32 other towns. The Germans are reported to be abandoning vast quantities of material in a retreat, which is described by the Russians in one word, headlong, a headlong retreat. London believes that the Nazis are definitely on the run, but it's expected that Germany will attempt to form a new line anchored at a point 300 miles northeast of Moscow and also in the south at Kharkov in the Ukraine.
These wars in Europe are not wars in which our civilization is defending itself against some Asiatic intruder. There is no Genghis Khan or Xerxes marching against our Western nations. This is simply one more of those age-old struggles within our own family of nations. If we enter fighting for democracy abroad, we may end by losing it at home.
Settle for lift without lightness, or lightness without lift. Get them both with RC, your thirst will agree, it's the brightest lift of the day.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are speaking to you from the South Portico of the Executive Mansion, the White House in Washington, D.C., where this evening or this afternoon, as the case may be in your own particular locality, the President of the United States is about to light the National Community Christmas Tree. This is a usual annual ceremony. It usually takes place in Washington. This is the first time, however, that the tree has been lighted directly on the White House lawn. We are immediately behind the White House, possibly 400 yards away from the spot from which we are speaking, is this enormous Christmas tree with the numerous lights that the President will press the switch and light in just a few moments. We are momentarily expecting the arrival of the President of the United States and, of course, with him today, his distinguished British guest, the Honorable Winston Churchill, Prime Minister of Britain. The program today will be handled by the Honorable Guy Mason, who is chairman of the National Community Christmas Tree Celebration and who is also one of the commissioners of the District of Columbia. There are several thousands of people here on the White House lawn, and further beyond this, oh, possibly 600 yards from this spot, more thousands of people here watching. I might point out that there are very few people within a very close vicinity of this South Portico. The White House grounds today are unusually well guarded. There are perhaps 200 to 250 plainclothes men, Secret Service men, and Capitol Park and White House police here. The President is approaching now on the arm of his naval aide, walking toward the microphone. Immediately behind him is the Honorable Winston Churchill. The President's being greeted by "Hail to the Chief."
Say, here's something that happened today right here in America. Say, suppose you tell about it, Ray.
Today, over 1 million people walked up to candy counters, reached in their pockets for a nickel, and said, I'll have a bar of Peter Paul's Mounds, please. Yes, every day over 1 million people enjoy this delicious chocolate coconut candy bar. When you have your first bite of Mounds, you'll know why. Coconut so tender and creamy, every bite melts in your mouth. And that coconut covered with rich brown chocolate. Try one and you'll agree there's nothing quite so mouth-watering as chocolate coconut Mounds.
Here in New York, Cupid is going to have to take to shelters. And the reason is that this city is having a marriage rush. A romantic blitzkrieg, as it were. 600 couples applied for marriage licenses during the last week. That's a new high for the year. One-third of the draftees for matrimony were soldiers, sailors, and prospective servicemen.
Many women are employed assembling and inspecting radios as the work is not heavy. However, men with training are sometimes placed in the production departments of radio manufacturing plants to gain practical experience. This work serves also as a proving ground for these men, and those who qualify may advance to positions of greater responsibility.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm speaking to you tonight at a very serious moment in our history. The Cabinet is convening and the leaders in Congress are meeting with the President. The State Department and Army and Navy officials have been with the President all afternoon. In fact, the Japanese ambassador was talking to the President at the very time that Japan's airships were bombing our citizens in Hawaii and the Philippines and sinking one of our transports loaded with lumber on its way to Hawaii. By tomorrow morning, the members of Congress will have a full report and be ready for action. In the meantime, we, the people, are already prepared for action. For months now, the knowledge that something of this kind might happen has been hanging over our heads. And yet, it seemed impossible to believe, impossible to drop the everyday things of life and feel that there was only one thing which was important, preparation to meet an enemy, no matter where he struck. That is all over now, and there is no more uncertainty. We know what we have to face, and we know that we are ready to face it. I should like to say just a word to the women in the country tonight. I have a boy at sea on a destroyer. For all I know, he may be on his way to the Pacific. Two of my children are in coast cities on the Pacific. Many of you all over this country have boys in the services who will now be called upon to go into action. You have friends and families in what has suddenly become a danger zone. You cannot escape anxiety. You cannot escape a clutch of fear at your heart. And yet I hope that the certainty of what we have to meet will make you rise above these fears. We must go about our daily business more determined than ever to do the ordinary things as well as we can. And when we find a way to do anything more in our communities to help others, to build morale, to give a feeling of security, we must do it. Whatever is asked of us, I am sure we can accomplish it. We are the free and unconquerable people of the United States of America. To the young people of the nation, I must speak a word tonight. You are going to have a great opportunity. There will be high moments in which your strength and your ability will be tested. I have faith in you. I feel as though I was standing upon a rock. That rock is my faith in my fellow citizens. Now we will go back to the program which we had arranged for tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new program of songs by Dinah Shore, with Paul LaValle and his orchestra, brought to you each Sunday at this time by Bristol Myers, in appreciation of your friendliness toward Minute Rub, Modern Chest Rub, and Sal Hepatica, famous laxative. And here she is, radio singing sensation, chosen as the outstanding new star of the year. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Dinah Shore.
Thank you, Harry. Thank you, and good evening, everyone. May I add one more Christmas card to those you've already received? Here's a sincere wish from all of us to all of you. A merry American Christmas, that's what we're wishing you. My, but it's just great we can celebrate underneath the sky of blue. A merry American Christmas, how happy we should be. As the church bells chime that it's Christmas time in the land of liberty. In every lighted window you'll see a Christmas tree, and hearts of young and old alike are joined in revelry. A merry American Christmas, the holiday's begun. This is the time for peace on earth and goodwill to everyone. A merry American Christmas, the holiday's begun. This is the time for peace on earth and goodwill to everyone.
Well, Dinah, right now, I think, should be the time to tell your audience what happens next Wednesday night.
Fine, Harry. Ladies and gentlemen, did you know that Bristol-Myers has given up its entire time next Wednesday evening from 9 to 10 to present a show on behalf of the American Red Cross? Mr. Cantor has invited some of the most famous people in the country to appear. There'll be Sybil McGee and Molly and Ronald Coleman.
And Loretta Young and Deanna Durbin.
And the Aldrich family and a host of others.
So be sure to listen next Wednesday from 9 to 10. Well, ladies and gentlemen, during the winter, which begins officially tomorrow, about 50 million Americans are going to suffer from the common cold. And because cold symptoms can make you feel wretched, spoil your fun, and interfere with your work, it's a mighty sensible idea to be ready to get after them immediately with Minute Rub. MinitRub. For you can depend on Minute Rub to help bring fast relief from cold wretchedness in not just one, but in three important ways. First,
Minute Rub's analgesic, or pain-relieving action, relieves the discomfort and tightness caused by local congestion.
Second,
rubbing on Minute Rub stimulates the circulation, helps relieve muscular pain, and brings a gratifying sensation of heat to the affected area.
And third,
Minute Rub's active menthol vapors aid in relieving that stuffed-up feeling in your nasal passages.
And remember, this famous modern rub is greaseless, and it's stainless, too. There's no need to worry about harming your clothes or linens. So stop at your drugstore for an economical tube of Minute Rub. You'll appreciate its feeling of brisk, heating warmth, for that means you've started to enjoy the famous three-way relief of Minute Rub.
You know, Harry, I was thinking the other day that songs are like people in a lot of ways.
Dinah, would you give me riddles at a time like this? Me, what hasn't even done his Christmas shopping yet?
No, no riddles, Harry, but I just meant that as time goes by, you get to like certain songs better, just as you grow fonder of certain people.
Mm-hmm.
See?
I'll wager, ma'am, that you're a-fixin' to swing into something mellow, like, say, St. Louis Blues.
Well...
Or Stardust.
You tempt me.
Oh, Mississippi Mud.
Now you're talking my language, Mr. Von Zell. That's one of the oldies I like best.
Well, convince me. Convince me.
We'll do my best, Harry. We'll do my best. When the sun goes down, tide goes out, all the darkies gather round, begin to shout. Hey, hey, Uncle Dud, it's the treat to beat your feet on the Mississippi Mud. It's the treat to beat your feet on the Mississippi Mud. What a dance do they do? Lordy, how I'm telling you, they don't need no band. They keep time by clapping their hands, just as happy as a cow chewing on his cud when the darkies beat their feet on the Mississippi Mud. Lordy, 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 how they play it. Goodness me, oh me, they really sway it. Uncle Joe, Uncle Dud, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Joy, oh joy, oh joy, the music thrills me. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, it nearly kills me. What a show when they go. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Sun goes down, tide goes out. Darkies gather round and they all begin to shout. Hey, hey, Uncle Dud, it's the treat to beat you.
Mississippi, on the Mississippi mud. It's a treat to beat your feet on the Mississippi mud. What a dance do they do? Lordy, I'm telling you, they don't need no band. They keep time for clapping their hands, just as happy as a cow when it's chewing on its cud. When the darkies beat their feet on the Mississippi mud.
Well, folks, you know how sometimes we feel if we can just live through Monday, the rest of the week will take care of itself. Because Monday, Blue Monday, is often a very difficult day. There's usually extra work to be done, and the weekend is apt to have left you feeling headachy and sluggish due to the need of a laxative. Yet you may put off taking one because you're busy, and consequently you go on feeling miserable. Now, that's not necessary. Just take Speedy Sal Hepatica, for Sal Hepatica brings gentle relief, usually within an hour. And Sal Hepatica also helps sweeten an upset stomach by helping to reduce excess gastric acidity. So get an economical bottle of Sal Hepatica before your druggist closes tonight. And then, whenever you need a laxative, morning, noon, or night, see how much faster you feel better when you take gentle, speedy Sal Hepatica.
You know, Harry, whenever I see a picture of our fleet in action or the midshipmen on parade, it gives me a wonderful thrill. It makes me sort of proud I'm an American.
Oh, yeah. Dinah, I take it that this week your song is for the Navy.
Yes, Harry, but particularly for the plebes in Bancroft Hall at the United States Naval Academy.
Yes, sir. Dinah Shore, for the future admirals at Annapolis, sings the song they have requested. Can't help loving that man of mine.
Fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly. I've gotta love one man till I die. Can't help loving that man of mine. Tell me he's lazy, tell me he's slow. Tell me I'm crazy, maybe I know. Can't help loving that man of mine. When he goes away, that's a rainy day. But when he comes back, that day is fine. And come home as late as can be. Home without him ain't no home to me. Can't help loving that man of mine. Can't help loving that man of mine.
Well, it's time to go, Dinah.
Folks, I sure hate to go, because I certainly love to sing for you. And if you like to listen, come to see us again next Sunday.
And in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a cold,
remember Minute Rub.
If you need a laxative,
remember Sal Hepatica.
And if you have 15 minutes at the same time next Sunday,
remember Dinah Shore, won't you? And remember to buy and give Uncle Sam's defense bonds and stamps for Christmas to make sure that we'll always have a Merry Christmas. Good night.
This is the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Amazing. makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with songs by Martha Tilton and the King's Men, and music by Billy Mills. The show opens with the National Emblem March. Ladies and gentlemen, I heard an officer of the Red Cross speak last night. He was asking for money. He said in part that it was customary these days to preface any request for help with an apology, but that he wasn't making any apology. Neither are we. The Red Cross needs $50 million, urgently and immediately. Now, for 130 million people, that's the price of a few cigars or a lipstick. The Red Cross is always ready to help in times of war and disaster, and from now on, the demands upon them will be great. But we are a great nation. So let's give till it hurts. The master of 79 Wistful Vista is not one to squander a buck and a quarter for a Christmas tree when he can drive out to the woods and chop down his own. No, sir. And here, driving up to the house, frostbitten but triumphant, we find that lumberjack who saves Jack on his lumber, Fibber of Fibber McGee and Molly.
Get them brakes fixed. Oh, boy, am I cold. Well, come on, Christmas tree. Come to Papa. You got a new home.
Oh. McGee, you're getting snow all over the hall. Why didn't you stamp your feet?
Why should I stamp my feet? I ain't mad at anybody. Besides, they're so cold, I'm just walking from memory.
Oh. Here, you poor lad. Let me take your coat and your mittens.
Thanks, Molly. Hey, take a gander at that tree, will you? Ain't she a whopper?
Heavenly days, it certainly is.
Yeah, it was the pick of the whole woods, Molly. I had to fight off 20 other guys to get it, too. They all wanted it.
Oh, did you actually fight for it, dearie?
Oh, it didn't come down to an actual brawl, no. One guy ups to me and says, "That's my tree, Shorty." And I says, "Yeah," I says, tossing my hatchet up in the air and catching it by the handle. "Get it," I says. "You don't need this tree for last Christmas," I says. And he says, "What do you mean, last Christmas?" "Well," I says, sinister-like, advancing toward him with a nasty look, "you lay a blade on that balsam bud, and last Christmas was your last Christmas."
Ah, good for you, McGee. Did he go away then?
No. Started swinging his axe at me. And just then I noticed that this tree, which was a little farther along and was even bigger and better.
Oh, yeah.
So I just sneered and walked away. Double time.
Well, it certainly is a big one. What'll we do with it after Christmas? Hollow it out and make a canoe?
Shucks now, Molly, just because...
What took you so long to get it home? You know, you've been gone 6 hours.
Well, I had a blowout on the way back and had to stop and buy a new secondhand tire. Cost me $7.
Where's the hatchet?
I lost it in the snow, but I know just where it is, and next spring when the snow melts, I'll get... Oh, my gosh. What's that?
Oh, it's that window in the dining room. I opened it because it was so hot in here, and it won't stay open.
Oh, well, I'll fix it when I get time. By the way, what time is it?
It's after 4. Why? Where's your wristwatch?
Well, I took it off to chop this tree down and forgot all about it. Then when I went back to look for it, it had snowed some more and covered it up.
Well, that's fine. A $30 wristwatch, a $2 hatchet, and a $7 tie. $39 for a 98-cent Christmas tree. Oh, happy Yuletide.
Well, I didn't want one of those measly little moth-eaten shrubs they're selling downtown. When I want a tree, not a bouquet. Come in.
Hello, Mayor Latrivia.
Good day, Mrs. McGee. I say, McGee.
Yes?
About that job you wanted in the City Hall. I'm still working on it, but I'll have to have a little information.
Well, tell the nice mayor what he wants to know, dearie.
Okay. Dig me, Latriv.
Well, first, can you dominate people? Can you let the ones in that you really want to see and shut the rest out?
Absolutely.
Another thing, McGee, can you stand it physically? To be mauled by crowds of people all asking you questions. Can you ignore the whispers behind your back? Can you give orders in a loud tone of authority?
Boy, can I. Listen to this, Triv. All right, folks. As captain of the detective force of Wistful Vista, I order you to make way there. Stand back, everybody. The police...
this wouldn't be a police job, McGee.
Oh.
But one of the elevator operators has just been drafted, and I've suggested you. I'll let you know later. Good day.
Why, that small-minded, boat-grabbing, baby-kissing...
Now. Never mind that now. Where should we place this tree, McGee?
I don't know. Where do you think?
Well, offhand, dearie, I'd say it was a toss-up between the Grand Canyon and Death Valley.
Shucks, I told you I got to trim it down a little. Get me a hatchet, will you?
The hatchet, dear boy, according to your official communique...
Yeah?
Is at present sleeping its edge off under a snowdrift 18 miles north of town.
Yeah, well, we got a saw, haven't we?
Not a very good one. It's all bent.
Who bent it?
You did.
Huh?
After you saw that vaudeville act at the Bijou last October, you tried to play pony boy on it, remember?
Well, I guess it'll still work. Say, it's awful hot in here.
Yes, it is. I'll open that dining room window again.
Okay.
The thermostat on the furnace is out of order, and I've got to get a tree.
Boy, am I tired. Ah, but what a tree. Why, this will give us enough kindling wood for all summer. Except that we don't need any kindling wood in the summer.
Hey, McGee, I just thought of something.
What's that?
This tree is so big, our little ornaments are going to look awful silly on it.
Yeah, I never thought of that. I better order a bigger assortment of ornaments. Now, hand me the phone, will you?
Here.
Thanks. Hello, operator. Give me the Wistful Vista Novelty and Day. Oh, is that you, Mert? How's every little thing, Mert? Huh? Who? Your niece. Somebody grabbed her and kissed her during the blackout.
Oh, heavenly days, McGee. Does she know who it was?
She'll recognize him when she sees him. He'll have lipstick all over his face, neck, and shirt front.
From just one kiss?
What do you mean, one kiss? That blackout lasted 3 hours. What say, Mert? Okay, I'll call him later. Hey, did you get me the saw, Molly?
Here it is, dearie. And now don't get sawdust all over my floor.
Why not? It'll make Uncle Dennis feel at home. Let's see. I guess I better take a couple of feet off of the bottom first.
Yes, and trim out 100 or so branches. Tarzan or somebody might be hiding in there.
Who?
Tarzan.
Who?
I said Tarzan.
Who?
Oh, stop it, McGee. That's
I didn't say anything. Talking. You says Tarzan.
Who?
Tarzan!
Who are you shouting at?
Who? Who? Who?
Hey, what the...
McGee, it's an owl. He's in that tree.
Huh?
Look, up on the fourth branch.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Shake the tree, Molly. Open the door and we'll shoo him out.
Who?
You! Go on, get out of that, you big buzzard. Go on, scram.
Shake it harder, McGee. There he goes.
Chase him, Molly. Chase him this way. Put it out to the table.
Oh, dear.
Ooh. Head him toward the door, Molly. Wave your hand.
I am waving my hand. Shoo, scat, go away, birdie. He won't even look at me, McGee.
Well, owls don't see good in the daytime.
Well, what do you expect me to do, buy him some glasses?
Hey, ooh, there he goes. Go on, beat it. Scram.
Woo-hoo.
Well, thank goodness. Those things give me the creeps.
Me too. Though I will say it was decent of him to back up my judgment.
What are you talking about?
Well, owls are wise birds, and we both picked out the same tree. Don't you get it, Molly? I says owls
are... Ain't funny, McGee.
Okay. But I've been hooted at enough for one day. Hand me the saw again. Thanks. Now...
Hello there, daughter. How's about... Hey, what you got there, Johnny? Christmas tree?
Oh, no. We buy our firewood on the hoof, Mr. Oldtimer.
What's on your mind besides that Daniel Boone cap, Oldtimer?
Just wanted to know if you could come out and play. Some of us kids are building a snow fort in that vacant lot up on the corner. Having a peck of fun.
No, thank you. We've got work to do, Mr. Oldtimer. I'm afraid you left a romp in the snow without us.
Oh, gee, kids, come on. We wanted to choose up sides and play Yanks and Japs. Only nobody wants to be a Jap.
We haven't got time to play now, old-timer. I got to trim this tree before...
Then you got a corncob pipe we can have, Johnny. I built a big snowman, and I want to put a pipe in his mouth.
Oh, give him a cigarette.
Yeah, and put a sign on him. Something new has been added.
That's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I heard it.
Oh,
the way I heard it... Hey, what was that?
Oh, it's just the dining room window, Mr. Old-timer. It won't stay open.
Hey? Oh, well... The way I heard it, one feller says, tell a feller, say, he says, why does Hitler make all his speeches from a beer garden? Well, says, tell a feller, that's so when he starts foaming at the mouth, nobody will notice it.
Martha Tilton sings Thank Your Lucky Stars and Stripes.
If you live right, if you get to sleep at night, you can thank your lucky stars and stripes. If you feel free, if there's sugar in your tea, you can thank your lucky stars and stripes. Steam heat and ham and eggs and hay rides and cider kegs. If you like the good old Yankee way, so say so. If you can sing and believe in anything, you can thank your lucky stars and stripes. Do you like it here? Don't you think this country is swell? Do you want to cheer? Ring the Liberty Bell. Well, if life is gay, if there's fun on Dollar Day, you can thank your lucky stars and stripes. If you can joke and enjoy an artichoke, you can thank your lucky stars and stripes. Stores and bobby pins and hot dogs and Mickey Finns. If you like the way we go about it, shout it. If you can sing and believe in anything, you can thank your lucky stars.
They cut down the old pine tree, and they hauled it away to the mill to make a nice Christmas tree just for Molly and me.
Hey. Goodness sakes, do you have to sing with your sawing?
No, I don't have to, but it helps. Hey, how does it look now, Molly? Beginning to shape up pretty good, eh?
Yes, if you like that shape. It's pretty lopsided.
It is? Where? Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Well, I can trim that side off a little more. It's a good thing I got a big tree to start with, you know it?
Well,
yeah.
Listen, now, try and be a little quieter. Uncle Dennis is upstairs taking a nap.
That guy's always taking a nap. And I just found out why he wanted that old brass bed brought down from the attic, too.
Why?
Well, I peeked in on him the other morning, and there he was, sound asleep, with one foot on the brass foot rail and a happy smile on his pretty little face.
Now, let's not start on poor Uncle Dennis again. He's a gentleman and a scholar.
He ought to be a scholar. He's had more teachers than anybody I ever knew. Oh, I cut down the old pine tree, and I hauled it away in my car.
McGee, there's somebody at the door.
Who?
I don't know. Let me peek. Oh, it's Mrs. Uppington.
Oh, not the Mrs. Uppington, the choicest crumb in our upper crust.
Yes. And wearing a hat that was made in a hurry by a cross-eyed milliner wearing boxing gloves. Come in, Abigail, darling.
How do you do, my dear? And Mr. McGee?
Hi, Uppy.
Please excuse the mess in here, Abigail. McGee is trimming the Christmas tree.
Oh, how fascinating. I simply adore the scent of freshly cut lumber, really. It's so invigorating and so outdoorsy, you might say.
Yeah, I might say that if I carried my handkerchief in my sleeve.
Say, I didn't know know you were such a lover of the great open spaces, Abigail.
Oh, my dear. I used to simply spend all my time at my hunting lodge in Maine. Roughing it, you know.
Ever hunt any moose?
McGee. Watch your commas, dearie.
Well, did you, Uppy?
Oh, no, no. I was never much of a nimrod, Mr. McGee. Oh. We called it a hunting lodge because we were always hunting a paw for bridge.
Ah, but you really ran wild up there, Uppy.
Don't pay any attention to him, Abigail. You know, he thinks he's a great woodsman because he shot a bear in Alaska last summer.
Well, that was something. If you ever walked through a dark forest with the feeling that something was creeping up on you, ready to pounce any minute, and suddenly...
Wow! Help! He got me! Shoot him!
Take it easy, McGee. Huh? Take it easy. It's just the window in the dining room. It won't stay open, Abigail. But say, where did you get that hat? I haven't been able to take my eyes off it.
Oh, do you like it, my dear?
She didn't say that. She just says she couldn't take her eyes off of it.
I tell you, it's just darling, Abigail.
Oh, I'm so glad. That's exactly why I dropped over today, my dear, to see if you liked it. Do you, Mr. McGee?
Well, confidentially, Uppy, since I'm a plain-spoken man, I think it's the worst monstrosity ever placed on a human head.
Oh.
It would make a Zulu medicine man swallow his spear.
Splendid. I'm a success.
What?
I just said to myself, if Mr. McGee likes it, I will simply have to give it to my cook. That man has less taste than a nightclub salad. Thank you, Mr. McGee. Goodbye.
Why, that old flounder. So I haven't got any taste, haven't I?
Not in hats, dearie. No. When it comes to fashions, you'd better just do one thing.
What's that?
Saw wood.
Huh? Oh, okay. I got needles galore sprinkled over the floor in the shade of the old pine tree. Hey, Molly, how's she look now?
Well, it looks better, McGee. At least we can get in the same room with it. Now, if you'll trim some more off the far side there.
Okay, hi, Harlow.
Hello, Fibber. Hello, Molly.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox. Won't you come in and get some sawdust all over your clothes?
Say, what goes on here anyway?
I went out and cut down my own Christmas tree, Harlow, and now I got to shorten the sleeves on it a little.
Well, you sure got the room in a mess, pal. You've got enough loose branches around here to bed down a rhinoceros.
Well, lie down and we'll try to make you comfortable.
Very funny, McGee. But what can we do for you, Mr. Wilcox?
Well, it's like this, Molly. I'm a little worried about the greeting cards I ordered this year. I'm afraid the sentiment is a little too flowery.
Well, read one to us, Mr. Wilcox. Though, personally, I don't think a greeting card could be too flowery.
Why, certainly not. Let them drip, I always says. Well, read the blurb, Waxy.
All right. It reads, "The season's greetings to you, my Fran, from the Johnson Self-Polishing Glow Coat Man. I hope that in 1942 and 43 and 44 and 45 and 46, you'll remember all those little tricks I showed you about saving time and dough by using Glow Coat on your flow."
On your flow? Well, shut my mouth, honey, child. You shut it, dearie. Continue, Mr. Wilcox.
"How it saves your linoleum and keeps it clean with a lovely gloss and a dandy sheen. Eliminates rubbing and buffing, too, and in 20 minutes or less, you're through. Just pour some out and spread it around and let it dry, and then you've found the color and pattern have come to life, and so have you, your husband's wife."
Oh, that's funny. Your husband's wife. If that ain't the corny.
Hey, what's that noise?
That was Longfellow turning over, Harlow.
Was the dining room window falling down again. But go ahead, Mr. Wilcox.
Well, there isn't much more.
Fine.
But it goes, "The best of wishes I send to you from me and S.C. Johnson & Son Incorporated, too." Well, what do you think of it? Okay. I'll get something else.
Naive character, isn't he, Molly?
How naive?
Oh, I was talking to him one day, and he looks all around to see if anybody was listening, then whispers to me that Santa Claus didn't really live at the North Pole. He said he really lived in Racine, Wisconsin.
Say, that tree's getting awfully small, yeah. McGee. Better not trim it much more.
I know, but I decided that it would look a lot better up on the piano.
Well, that'll be nice. Yeah. Then it'll be out of the way.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll go out and fix that dining room window.
Okay. Oh, I cut down the old pine tree, 'cause the ones at the store were not free. I told the man at the store,
There's a knock at the door.
I wonder who that could be. Come in. Oh, hello, Mr. Wimple.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. How are you today, Mr. McGee?
Fit as a fiddle and ready to play humoresque, Wimp, old shrimp. What's it with you?
I just dropped in to say goodbye for a couple of weeks, is all.
Oh.
I'm spending the holidays in Chicago with Mama and Papa.
Oh. Is your wife going with you, Mr. Wimple?
Who, Sweetie Face?
Uh-huh.
No, she has to stay here and knit.
Knit? Can't she knit on the train?
Not so good, Mr. McGee.
Oh.
She broke three ribs wrestling with a policeman, and the doctor says she'll knit much better at home.
Well, what on earth was she doing wrestling with a policeman?
Oh, she is the instructor at the police gymnasium, Mrs. McGee. The whole force is just crazy to study with her. At least, I think they are.
I'll bet you'll miss her, Wimple.
How much?
How much will you miss her?
No, how much will you bet? Oh, I shouldn't say that, I suppose. Sweetie Face is really a wonderful woman at heart, if any, and I doubt it.
Well, we'll call on her while you're gone, Wimple, and see if there's anything we can do.
Yes, we might take her some fruit or something.
Oh, I wouldn't advise it, Mrs. McGee. Last time Sweetie Face was sick, some people took her some flowers, and she threw them in their faces.
Oh, don't she like flowers?
Yes, she loves flowers, but she hates people. Well, goodbye, folks, and Merry Christmas.
And you.
The King's Men sing Coming Through the Rye.
If a body meet a body, coming through the rye. If a body kiss a body, meet a body, cry. Every laddie has a lassie, may they say.
If a body meet a body coming through the rye, if a body kiss a body, need a body cry.
Now everyone must have a loving lassie, but they say that the lassies always pass me by.
Yet all the girls, they smile at me coming through the rye.
If a body meet a body coming through the rye, if a body kiss a body, need a body cry.
Every little laddie has a bonny little lassie, but may they say hey, aye. Yet all we lads and lassies get together in the heather when we're coming, whilst we're coming through the rye.
What are you sounding now?
McGee, haven't you got that tree fixed yet?
No, but it won't be long now, Molly. Anyway, I hope not. This saw's getting duller than a bus trip to Bloomington.
Well, is it still awfully hot in here, McGee?
You're asking the wrong man, Mrs. McGee. I'd be hot right now if I was up to my clavicle in ice cubes. This is a warm work.
Well, I hate to keep that dining room window open, but the thermostat on the furnace simply won't work. Say, have you been monkeying with that, McGee?
Who, me?
Yes, you.
With the thermostat?
Yes.
Why should I have been monkeying with the thermostat?
That's what I want to know.
Heck, I don't know anything about a thermostat.
I know that, too, but did you monkey with it?
When?
Anytime.
Well, say, I did kind of tinker with it last night at that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Now it comes out. And just what did you do to it, Mastermind?
Well, I was walking past it with a screwdriver in my hand, and the screwdriver caught in one of the little screws, and the first thing I knew, I had it all apart. Wonderful little gadget, too.
McGee, I don't know what I'm going to do with you.
That's a coincidence, Molly. I don't know what I'm going to do with this little dingus I took out of it, either. I couldn't find any way to get it back in there.
Well, why didn't you tell me so I could call the furnace man?
Well, I was going to fix it myself when I got time. I'm pretty ingenious with mechanical stuff. You know that.
Oh, sure. What happened when you fixed my percolator?
What you mean?
It throws coffee across the room like a fire extinguisher. And my electric toaster.
Oh, well.
I have to fix breakfast wearing a catcher's mitt.
Oh, well. No machine is perfect. As soon as I finish with this tree, I'll fix it. Stop a while and listen to my
Well, you story. Go ahead and I'll go open that dining room window.
Okay. Come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hi, sis.
What you doing? Who are you?
Sis, I'm currently engaged in giving this deposed monarch of the forest a cross-cut massage. I says I'm doing a little whittling on this Christmas tree. Look, do you always drink your milk like a good girl?
Sure I do, I betcha. Why?
Well, you better, that's all. Take a look at this saw. Only 3 years old and its teeth are all shot. Let that be a lesson to you.
Okay, mister.
Now, I wish you wouldn't bother me anymore now. I gotta finish this job and get the sawdust swept out.
Gee, you know it smells dandy in here.
Sure it does. Mm-hmm. No nicer smell in the world than a cedar tree. It's one of nature's lures to get us out into the great outdoors.
Gee, is it? Honest, mister?
Sure it is. You gotta realize, sis, that there's a reason for everything in nature.
Oh. What's nature's reason for spinach, huh?
Why, sis, do you mean to stand there with your little arms sticking out of your shoulders and tell me you don't know that?
Yes, I don't, I betcha.
Why? Nature gave us spinach so we could have Popeye.
Oh. Gee, I guess I never thought of that, mister. Nature is wonderful, isn't he?
She.
Hmm?
Nature, sis, is always referred to as she.
Why?
Well, because... Oh, boy, here's my chance to make Reader's Digest. Sis? Nature is called she because it's so inconsistent, unstable, unpredictable, beautiful, mean, gorgeous, appealing, nasty, and nobody yet has ever understood her.
You think the Reader's Digest would like that?
Well, don't you?
The name of the magazine, mister, is Digest, not Heartburn. So long now.
It's the last time I ever try to explain something to her, if I'm smart. Okay. Uh-oh. Aha. Now we're getting someplace. Now to cut her down on the sides. I'll trim the ends a little bit. Let's get her off there.
Oh, heavenly days. There goes that window again.
You don't have to worry about it anymore, Molly. Here's a nice stick I made for you to prop it up with.
Oh, fine, dearie. Just the thing. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, forget it. It's nothing that any red-blooded American boy could have done.
Say, it was very thoughtful of you now, McGee. Say,
yeah?
What became of the Christmas tree?
That's it. I got her trimmed down a little too fine. Well, that's that, I guess. Now to go to work on that thermostat.
No, don't do it.
Folks, day after day and night after night on this program and others for the past 2 weeks, you've heard urgent requests to buy defense bonds and defense stamps. It's getting a little repetitious, isn't it? Well, it's going to get more repetitious. We're going to say it again and often and loud. This is not an invitation to a tea party or a bingo game. This is war, and we've got to do something about it. It's going to cost a lot of money to win it, but it would cost a lot more than mere money to lose it. Now, don't wait for somebody to come to your door selling bonds and stamps. Get down to your bank or post office and lay it on the line. This isn't the other fellow's fight. It's yours and mine. So here it is again. Buy defense bonds and defense stamps.
Yes, and if you live in Canada, buy war-saving certificates or victory bonds.
Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, 91.9 FM, Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM, Philomath and Corvallis. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Radio Cab. Turkey Project, a hunger relief program providing complete Christmas dinners to families struggling with food insecurity, seniors, the infirm, and those without transportation. Information on how to make donations at radiocabfoundation.org. Stay tuned for KBOO's Youth Collective coming in with a really cool show about magic.
2013, the year of the whistleblower. U.S. spy apparatus was exposed for all to see. Join me, Linda Olsen Osterlund, on A Deeper Look, Thursday, December 26th. My guest is Carl Messinio of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, the man responsible for the face of Edward Snowden appearing on buses throughout Washington, D.C. It's the Thank You, Edward Snowden campaign. We'll take a look back at 2013, the year of the whistleblower. That's Thursday, December 26th at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/stationmanagerhire2013. KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station.
Now KBOO is proud to present the Youth Collective on Magic.
I was never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me. And now it's